Ryan Zink. Not Ryan Zinke.
No, not a rhino.
Very different. Ryan Zink. Thank you very much. So you're running for Congress.
I am.
From Texas.
Yes.
Lots of people running for Congress from Texas. The reason I thought we would all benefit from hearing your story is that you were a January 6th defendant.
Yes.
And you went through many years of trials, both literally and figuratively, in the aftermath of that. And you've emerged as a real candidate. And so I'd just like to begin by hearing your J6 story. Why did you go to Washington on January 6th? And what happened?
So I guess to like summarize, make things a little bit shorter is I was out on a break from school. I was studying media strategy, public relations, but I'd got hit by a drunk driver. And so my dad worked in sports medicine for years and I had a lapse in my insurance coverage. So I went to Arizona to work on his congressional campaign. So he was at the time running against Ruben Gallego.
Your dad?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And
where were you? You see, you're in college when this happened.
Yes. Yeah. So I came in late in college. Like I stopped and built wind turbines for, you know, a while. Just I kind of bounced. I didn't really find anything that I really loved until I found safety. And then, of course, now politics, apparently.
Yeah.
But so I was helping him with his, you know, congressional campaign because I was in media. Like I had a camera, you know, and I was we started off slow like everybody else does, you know, with his campaign where money was super tight. And so I went up there to, one, get free treatment for my neck and shoulder. And then
from your dad.
Yeah. And then two, you know, just to help him on his campaign. And,
so
you know,
you're working for your dad in exchange for free neck and back treatment.
Pretty much. Yeah. Okay. Nothing free out of the old man.
Okay.
But no, I mean, it was really my first glance in politics. Like the first time that I had ever voted was the Donald Trump's first term.
Yeah.
Began the only reason that I thought that was because I was like, you know, I've seen what, like I met Bill Clinton and in college at WT when I used to go there, and I was really weirded out by him when I met him.
What about him?
Creepy, soft hands, his demeanor towards the girls that were in the room in the back area, and then the way he carries himself. I think it was discernment is what I think.
Interesting.
It was.
So bad vibes would be one way to put it.
Yeah, and this is like before I was like really a Christian too, like, you know, living, practicing my, yes, you know, my life in accordance.
Well, those are animal instincts and we should never ignore them because they're accurate.
Well, definitely, you know, like looking back now and, you know, everything I've been through, yeah, it was a stark warning. To like be vigilant, be aware of what's happening around you.
Interesting. Huh.
So, but yeah, so campaign trail, you know, going out. Well, dad, we start looking at, you know, the votes about everything that's going on. And he tells me, he's like, you know, hey, I think this is it. He's like, I think we're going to witness history if we go to the Capitol. I don't even want to go. I want to go home.
Right.
You know, because I've got my lovely, beautiful wife now was, you know, waiting for me back in Texas. And I, you know, left before Thanksgiving. And I didn't even want to go to the Capitol. And I was like, well, okay, I was like, I guess like we can do this. So I started thinking, I was like, you know,
so your dad's encouraging you to go.
Yes. Yeah. He wanted me to go because he wants B-roll footage. He wants, him at the Capitol, you know, in front of all the fountains. And, you know, we wanted to present, you know, like a strong, unified presence in media, just like, you know, every candidate wanted to.
Yeah.
And
so your dad believed that footage of him at the Capitol on January 6th would be good for his campaign.
Yes. And not just that, but like,
so obviously he wasn't planning a violent insurrection or he wouldn't have brought you as his cameraman.
No, if we were planning an insurrection, I would have brought a lot more that day than, you know, just my camera.
Right. No, that's
So he wasn't even actually in the best of good health at that time. Like, there was a time like 6 years before that I thought I was going to lose my dad. Like we were actually like planning funerals and
I'm sorry,
kind of looking at stuff. So that it was a hard time, but then, you know, God healed him in that December and he's, you know, we've been rocking and rolling ever since. But, you know, we were both like actively hurt. Like it would have been very hard pressed for us to do an insurrection that day. You know, my neck and shoulder injuries, like my shoulder was like froze up here like this for like 6 months. And, you know,
wow,
like I did physical therapy for like 2 years. But you know, it's insane looking back because we thought that, you know, we were going to see history for the first time, that, you know, the vote would get kicked back to the states and that, you know, the states would vote party line, you know, for what that was what we thought was going to happen. And it turned out to be completely different. You know, I remember getting in on January 5th, staying with some family in like the, I think it was like the upper Marlboro, Maryland area, and making our way across, you know, is the first time in my mind that I can remember. I think I went to DC once when I was younger, but this was very real. It was very, you know, very like you would see in the movies. Like there's, you know, steam pouring out of the sewers the second that we get off, you know, the metro. There's already like thousands of people. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, and there's already thousands of people like over near the Capitol. And so I'm already, you know, taking pictures, and this will be relevant later as well. But it's crazy to step off the metro and that early in the morning, there's thousands of people already at the Capitol, all along, headed up towards the Washington Monument where President Trump was going to be speaking. And then that was pretty much like, you know, where we started the day. Went in there. I saw Diamond and Silk for the first time walking through. And remember, I'm still not very political at this point. Like, I believe that there's a lot that's going on with elections that we're being lied to about, but I don't see it in the capacity that I see it today. I'm basically there for, you know, a free trip with my dad to Washington, D.C., you know, to hang out for a little bit, get some B-roll footage and go home. And then, you know, so I don't get to go in to where the president is speaking because Secret Service. I have a laptop. I have a camera. I have SD cards. I have multiple lenses. I have a tripod. I have all this stuff. And Secret Service is like, you can't, you know, like we're not allowing anyone else with bags into this area that we're going in. And so I never got to hear Trump speak at all. Like I was already had made my way up to the Capitol. We stopped and had lunch at a building that I would get to know very well, 333 Constitution Avenue, the courthouse where I was later convicted at. And, you know, we ate lunch over there and then made our way all the way down to the Capitol. My dad talked, did an interview with the Epic Times. We spent a good portion, like we had to go sit down after this, and then made our way over to the east side of the building where I remained for only a few moments up until everything happened. And then sat down, talked to Samoans for Trump, you know, anti-communist party for Trump, you know, just real, you know, gross people, you know, who've, you know, escaped you know, horrors that we see with communism, you know, talking about like things that Trump is doing versus like where they came from. And then we get to where things start rolling for the day. You know, it's before the objection of Ted Cruz and let's see, the representative from Arizona. And then we can hear the whole time, like on the east side of the building, we hear somebody talking through a megaphone, okay? And they keep telling, and they're talking to a Capitol Police officer. Well, I would later identify this man as Dunphy. And they are saying into the microphone that they're talking to, like, hundreds of people on the east side. You know, like, we know that you guys have a right to protest, and we know that you have the permits. We're talking to our superiors, and we're going to let you in to, you know, and to go up. And we're looking around. We're like, what do they mean go up? Like, are we going in the building? Like, what are they talking about here? So after this, nothing really happens. They keep talking on the bullhorn. We can hear they're trying to like put a phone up to it to where you can hear like President Trump speak. And then all the proceedings inside of the building start going as well. And we at like the DOJ has like a huge camera that's, you know, on top of the Capitol building that looks down over the east side. And I was standing just kind of over the visitor center to the right hand side in front of this like green light pole. And right to our left, there's probably, I don't know, like 300 people in front of us, and we can't really see what's going on. And I'm trying to like lean out the railing to see what's happening. And you know, 400 feet in the air, you can tell that there's pushing and shoving that's going on down over there. We don't know why they're bringing bike racks over to this side. You know, that impenetrable wall fortress that they built around the Capitol was bike racks that, you know, were connected together. And so there's some pushing and shoving that's going on over here. We can't really tell what's going on or like who the instigator is. But at this time, like right as soon as all of this happens, we start seeing like hundreds of people come this way. And this is as soon as Ted Cruz and them object. I mean, it is literally like Texas objects, bang, J6 goes off. And there's hundreds of people coming from the right side.
Kind of funny that Ted Cruz is at the center of this.
I find it more funny that there are a lot more people who weren't at that time, just based on what we knew. But I do think that it was timed for the objection. I think that the fact that a senator had finally gotten involved with it is the like principal point of where they had to do something that day in order to stop more information coming out. Because I mean, the time period between the objection and when the eruption happens is 5 seconds.
Really?
Yes.
February is the perfect month to get cozy because it's chilly outside. Our partners at Cozy Earth understand this, and they're helping Americans everywhere stay toasty throughout the frigid winter. I hope you're seated because this detail may shock you. Cozy Earth offers bamboo pajamas. Lightweight, shockingly soft. These pajamas are a true upgrade. They sleep cooler than cotton. Plus, they're made out of bamboo. That is just wild and awesome. From pajamas and blankets to towels and sheets, Cozy Earth is something unusual and great for everybody, and it's entirely risk-free. You get a 100-night sleep trial, 10-year warranty. There is no downside that we can see. So share love this February. Wrap yourself or someone you care for in comfort that feels special. Bamboo pajamas! Visit CozyEarth.com. Use the code Tucker for 20% off. That's code Tucker for up to 20% off. And if you get a post-purchase survey, make certain to mention you heard about Cozy Earth from us.
So what'd the eruption look like from your perspective?
So from my perspective, so I'm right on the railing. I see a couple hundred people coming this way. They're already past police officers. They're inside of the area, which were not properly, that, you know, they always say like, oh, there were signs around the Capitol that day. There wasn't. If you go back and you look at, I hate to say her name, but Pam Hemphill's video where she's walking through, she's behind the police line in front of where we are at the time. And, There's no signs up. Well, I have a picture of what the sign is actually supposed to look like in order to cordon off that area so that people, the general public who has no idea what this area is in front of them, you know, they'll claim, you know, state of mind that we did because it was an area. But whenever you see police opening barricades, so there was an officer that testified against me that was waving people through the barricades. I'll show you the video. And he was waving people through, and then there's hundreds of people on this side, and I still didn't go through. Like, me and my dad kind of looked at each other, and we were like, what is happening? And I was like, I don't know. I guess they opened everything up. And then, like, even right there, he was like, you don't think they're going to let us into the building, do you? And I was like, I wouldn't think so. I was like, you know, there's, like, proceedings going on inside. I was like, maybe this is, you know, the area that the protests have the permits for. So we make our way up. I'm talking, I'm saying stuff like I'm an American. I have the First Amendment. And so I'm saying, you know, like we're storming the Capitol, you know, we're like, you know, they can't stop us. And what I'm, you know, the DOJ will tell you that I was talking about, you know, Capitol Police, you know, that like, oh, these guys can't stop us. They're trying to say that I like was making that disassociation. But what I'm talking about is like the protests, like American people finding out the truth of what was going on. And to be completely honest, like I'm overwhelmed. I don't really have any idea what's going on inside of the building then. Like, you know, how much do you actually know until you get to spend like an engrossed amount of time, like the last 5 years that I've spent about what goes on?
I've watched so many videos from January 6th and I have no idea what's going on even now. Like, I mean, it's chaos. It's impossible and, in the moment to know what's going on.
And, you know, to be like a very like junior journalist, like the only thing that I've covered at this point is like football games for a Big 12 university. And you know, a couple basketball games here and there, wrote some articles for a magazine. Like, I'm doing the journalist thing, but I'm not in school from my injuries. And then this is when things start to get weird. Okay. So, what happens is, and I'll brush through this part, but this is very critical because I did send you the evidence of this stuff last night. So the police stop everybody at the base of the stairs in front of the Columbus doors, and then they just open it up. So we're like, you know, a couple hundred people back. We can't really hear what's going on. And they just open up the stairs, turn around, and go stand in front of the Columbus door. So we go up onto the east side porch because I'm thinking, I'm like, dude, this is going to be some great footage. That's like, well, that's what I keep thinking. I'm like, this is going to be memorable. Like, this is something that people are going to talk about. If I had only known, it's just how much they were going to talk about it.
You did underestimate it a bit.
Like, yeah. I mean, like, police are actively letting people into the area. But it gets worse for my case, because then I go up onto the porch. Well, then the first person that I see, like the actual first like violence engagement that I saw for the day, the literal tip of the spear, everybody says that it was the West Side. It's not. It's Hunter Allen Emke, is as far as I've come to know, that he's an Antifa member from California. I videotaped him jump up onto the ledge of the windows next to the Columbus doors. And he begins punching and kicking out those windows. Well, there are people up there that are all dressed pretty similar.
Now, wait a second, Ryan. Why would an Antifa member from California be protesting a stolen election on Trump's behalf?
That's a great question.
And it just doesn't make sense.
I got called a conspiracy theorist by my judge for even mentioning this fact.
Right.
So, you know, I believe that there were people in the crowd that day. I believe that Bobby Powell, rest in peace, Bobby. I believe that he also captured federal agents that day near that window that were telling people to go in the building. But we don't have
of
any.
Of course. And tell us who Bobby Powell was.
Bobby Powell was an independent journalist who he testified in my case. He was press that was there that day just to, you know, take videos. He was never arrested, you know, anything, but he mysteriously, after he started releasing and talking about all of the footage that he had of these federal agents, succumbed to multiple heart attacks and then eventually passed away from one of those.
He didn't kill himself like some of the Capitol Hill police officers.
No, he didn't. Yeah. Bobby was a Marine. He was a very strong willed man, and there's not a chance that he would have ever taken his own life.
Yeah. Well, you could say that about others who supposedly killed themselves too.
Mm-hmm.
Just a fact. Sorry. I'm sick of this.
I am too. Yeah. Just for the record, like, I'm very mentally sound and I have no plans to harm myself after this interview either.
I used to say that in jest, but let's stop pretending.
Yeah.
So, okay. You saw someone who's been conclusively identified as an Antifa member smash the windows.
Yes.
Yep.
Who's not been seen since. Like, he got a prison sentence. He has not come to any of the J6 functions that I'm aware of. I don't know people that know him. Like, J6 is, you know, 1500 plus. Never heard from this dude again.
Did he go to prison?
Apparently for 4 months. I've been unable to track down anyone that served time with him or a facility that he went to, like, in capacity, because the Bureau of Prisons won't comment, you know, on.
Oh, yeah, they won't comment because
particularly
it's not our government, right? Yeah, I'm getting that impression. Okay, so he smashed windows. Then what do you do?
I start videoing, man. Like, you know, this is like, it's crazy. Like, there's a dude, he just like jumped up and like smashed a window. And so at this time, all these similar dressed people, they turn and they start yelling at the Capitol Police, and they're, you know, saying like, you know, hey, we're gonna kill you, you're not taking them. And I start yelling at him. I'm like, leave him alone. The police are just doing their job. He's breaking the law. Leave him alone. He's breaking the law. Like, at that point, it doesn't matter what I'm there to protest. Like, that's not why we're here. Like, we protest stolen election. We use our voice. You know, you can use your voice. What I've discovered can carry so much farther than any.
Much more than your gun. That
right.
is real.
Yeah, absolutely. And, so they knock Hunter off the ledge, take him into custody, just like they should. And immediately after this is when I go and I ask a Capitol Police officer by the name of Benjamin Fluke. I said, you know, hey, how can we help you? Like, this, like, what can we do for you guys? Like, because we can see they're outnumbered. Like, there's people yelling at them. Like, Though I don't believe that those were Trump supporters. I don't.
People seem to be more inflamed, not just emotionally, but physically, and more tired than ever. And food is part of the reason. Bad food. Ugh. Tastes good, but not good for you. For most of human history, people ate actual food. Stuff that your body recognizes. But now you eat a ton of chemicals. Paleo Valley is the solution to this. Paleo Valley's bone broth protein is made from, 100% grass-fed and finished beef bones. That's it. No fillers, no additives, no weird industrial byproducts. It's actual food turned into something you can consume every day. Most people use it the way we do. You blend it into a smoothie or coffee. The chocolate flavor is top tier. It actually tastes awesome. They also have vanilla and salted caramel. Plus, they make a savory original turmeric ginger in an unflavored version you stir into soup, rice, or even just mix with hot water and drink, like bone broth. You could do any of those things or all of them. Americans use Paleo Valley to support joints, digestion, recovery. Paleo Valley verifies sourcing and tests for pesticide, and that does matter. You don't want to drink pesticide, though you probably do inadvertently. If you want to add something genuinely useful to your diet, visit paleovalley.com and use the code Tucker for checkout. 20% off your first order if you do that. That's paleovalley.com, code Tucker, for 20% off. Let me ask, so the Antifa member on the ledge who smashes the windows, you said people dressed in the same way came to his defense?
People dressed in like all black. Like when you go and you look at the video and you hear the voices, you can tell that there's a different tone with these dudes. And like, so as I've studied, you know, footage from other areas of the Capitol over the last 5 years too, you can kind of see some similarities in the way that people dress. There's also wristbands that have been identified on certain people too, that we think that was an identifying marker for different groups that were there to cause problems. So
have any of them been identified, or they're all masked?
No. And then it really doesn't help that the Department of Justice was paying, you know, like the sedition hunters, like $100,000 to use artificial intelligence to identify January 6ers that they couldn't do because it breaks the law and the way that they're going out and gathering evidence. So they paid, you know, this independent group of leftist Trump haters to come and identify us. And then they were paying them like per arrest on top. But that's, you know, that's like another area. But
they hired Antifa bounty hunters to hunt down Trump voters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
And so, and then like, you know, Ray Epps, that whole deal, like why did the DOJ protect him when they came after like everybody else?
Did you see Ray Epps there?
No, I may have like just like in the periphery, like when I was walking through the west side to leave like later in the afternoon, but I never saw him.
I keep stepping on your story. My apologies. So you see the window smash, people flow in the building, you're taking video. What happens then?
So I asked Benjamin Fluke, I was like, well, you know, what can we do to help you? And instead of saying, you know, like, you need to leave, like, you're not supposed to be here, like anything like that, he tells me, stay on the porch and take pictures of them. And that's in my transcripts. You know, he actively admits that not only did he like deputize me to stay up there to assist them with people that like getting video of people that are attacking them. He doesn't, you know, he's not asking me to leave. So I do that. I stay up there with my dad. You know, my dad gives his business card. You know, he has his congressional cards. He's where I'm at now. He has a house number. He has FEC filings. Like we're in this, you know, the election's coming up. You know, we're running for Congress with him, and we give that business card out. And this is when one of the worst parts of January 6th happens. Shortly after this, we're up there, I'd say probably about 40 minutes is like the total length of my Capitol day, at least being on the porch. So those police officers, we're talking to them. I'm listening to the radio that one of them has. It's up here. I misspoke at the time because it was really hard to hear radio traffic, but I'm saying things like, you know, there are people inside of the Capitol. There's a fire inside. I'm posting all of this on Facebook, you know, and I'm trying to stay like neutral from this like point forward, because basically everything, you know, it turned on a dime. You know, we went from a protest to what is this? And so I'm talking to those officers, and then Ashley Babbitt is murdered by Michael Byrd. And we can hear the shots inside of the building from where we are. And there's a video. So all of the Capitol police officers that testified against me Officer Fluke, Officer Mooney, and the officer who was seen on film waving people through. I cannot remember his name right now. But they all testified that at no point did the Capitol Police take me and my father behind their police line where they were holding Hunter because we were working with them. And well, now I have that video in my possession. That camera was not allowed to be viewed before it went to trial. And the video that I sent your team last night is the literal perjury of all three of my federal witnesses in my case that stated that I was not there to assist police at that time and that I was not working with them because there's an officer that comes over. He separates us from protesters in the gear that I was talking about and says, like, hey, these guys are with us. He's running for Congress. This is his son. He's been helping document if people attack us. And then he says, they think that the shooting is like down on the lower level. They don't know, you know, where it is in the building. And so they take us and we go like right into the corner of the Columbus doors. Well, all of a sudden, the 20,000 pound doors that have to be remotely opened from inside of the United States Capitol by pushing a button open. They open the Columbus doors. And there are people that are coming in and out of those doors. And it is at this is the point of the day where the officer that we've been talking to that was never identified by the Department of Justice, they refused to identify this individual along with the other five or six police officers that were on the porch. I just got the three that testified against me when I had multiple additional witnesses that I could have called that wore a badge that would have said, like, no, they were helping us. But, at this point is when we see like the first like remnants of the battle that's going on either inside of the Capitol. Cause I don't necessarily know where this officer came from. I haven't been able to identify him because they won't give us the cameras of the porch. And, so he comes out, he's injured. He's holding his shoulder. He's got mace all over his face and dad works in sports medicine. And he just takes one look at him and he's like, that guy needs medical help. So dad tries to help him. He declines help, but he has mace all over his eyes. And so I'm reaching through my bag, trying to get out water to let him rinse his eyes out. And then at that point, this is like the last interaction that we have with pretty much anyone for the day is because at that point, that's when Mariel Bowser declares that there's going to be a curfew that comes in. So we can hear it on the radio of the guy, the police officer, Capitol Police officer that's standing there. And so he says, you know, hey, we appreciate all of your help. Things are getting really crazy on the other side. It'd probably be a good idea for y'all to leave. We say, okay. That guy refuses treatment one more time. He's rinsing his eyes out. I asked my dad, I was like, hey, I want to put the big lens on. I want to stand on this pillar over here and I want to take pictures inside and see what's going on. And that's the first time that day that you can actually see people like pushing and shoving with like a Capitol Police officer. At least from our perspective. Now, if you have the big high camera and you can look over, like you can see that there was some in front of us that we couldn't see. I'm 5'8", you know, 200 pounds. And I'm not the tallest guy in the world. So I can't see over a lot of people. So then we leave, you know, we go back around. I take some pictures by the bike racks where what I think is blood is on the ground, but I'm not sure. It could have been a spilled drink. Like it could have been. Like anything where the bike racks were, and we start making our way around. And then I see Jacob Chansley, which we all came to know as the QAnon shaman. I saw him on the steps of the Senate side, and we make our way around to the west. And this is when it hits, and it's like, this is going to be talked about forever because the sea of people that were out there, just thousands and thousands of people that are on that side. We have no, like, we're on the east side, sheltered in a tiny little corner. We have no idea the scale of what is happening at the Capitol. And, you know, and people always talk about the west side footage and things, you know, they always show, you know, the tunnel videos where you see people attacking. Well, the reason that they were attacking that day is because a Metro police officer, Lila Morris, had just beaten a woman to death by the name of Roseanne Boyland. And that's what they were reacting to. And so as we're making our way around to go get onto the metro. The closest metro was directly across the west back towards the other side. So we made a beeline through the crowd.
Can I say, so are you allowed to beat people to death in this country?
Well, apparently if you wear a badge in DC, which if you don't know, like across the standard, the Capitol Police and Metro Police, with their combined, particularly on the metro side, is the ninth most violent police force in America.
Yeah, of course.
You think about that. Think about all the sheriff's offices, the police offices around the country. They're the ninth most violent police force.
They always had the highest accidental discharge rate for their handguns too.
Yeah, which, you know, amazing that it didn't, you know, it didn't happen that day. So that was my J6 day, you know, like outside of saying things like we're storming the Capitol, like, do you hear us? You know, like words outside of a building. I never went inside the building. I never assaulted anybody. I never broke anything. I was assisting police officers on the porch, yelling at protesters.
You never went inside the building?
I never did.
It's been a lot of noise in the news recently, but none of it matters if you can't hear it. There's no shame in this. Millions of people get deafer every year. Some we know well. But your friends, our friends at Audion can help. For years, the experts made hearing aids cost thousands of dollars. They forced you to get a prescription, see a doctor, jump through all these hoops just to hear your grandkids talk or have a conversation in a restaurant. Why? Because they made money. That's why. Over 460 million people worldwide have hearing loss, yet 80% do not have hearing aids because who'd want to deal with that? So it's a crisis and it's being ignored. And that's why Audion is the answer. It offers FDA-compliant hearing aids for as low as $98. No prescription, no doctor's visit. Over 1.5 million Americans already using them to regain clarity in their lives, to regain hearing. You can find them at nearly 10,000 retailers nationwide, including Walmart and Walgreens. Audion's doing what the system should have done all along, making essential healthcare affordable for everyone. Go to HearTucker.com. That's HearTucker.com or call 1-800-453-2916 to learn more about how Audion can help you or someone you love hear better.
Okay, so did you have any worry that you would be arrested for what you didn't do?
No, because what I thought was going to happen was that we were going to turn over the videos of Hunter Emke. That we had, that we would probably fill out an affidavit. And I was kind of expecting like a call from like maybe Secret Service, FBI, somebody, you know, over that time. But what actually happened was later, February 4th, 2021, at just after 4 a.m., the FBI drives through the front of my house with a 12-foot battering ram.
Actually?
Yes.
They're monsters. I just want to say that. That's disgusting.
I agree.
Treat you like that.
I agree. You know, a phone call.
There's been no reform of them at all. And on other channels, are just being screamed at for asking questions.
There's been no accountability across the board from it. And that's not to say that I don't support law enforcement in this country.
I don't support that. I don't care what you call that. I don't support that. That's the oppression of the population that employs you and pays for this. And you have no right to treat citizens like that. I mean, that is, pardon my lecture. So you're in bed. You're back in Texas.
Yes.
Do you live in an apartment, house?
I lived in a rent house at the time.
And you're asleep.
Sound asleep.
And what happened? What was your experience?
So I actually don't hear anything. So I did kind of live in a rough neighborhood. Those around Lubbock, you know, it's getting close to Avenue Q. It's a bit on the rough side. So I think my house is...
Because you're a rich guy. You're a person of privilege. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm just super loaded. That's why I'm in this position.
So you live in the hood.
Yes. Very, very much so. But it's a great part of the district, though, too.
No, like, I'm not criticizing it. It's just funny. It's like...
It has some higher crime rates and LPD's done a great job actually in recent months, like getting that area cleaned up. So it's getting better. And, but the people there are still like even my friends and neighbors, you know, that were around there, they're just appalled at the way that I was treated.
So you're asleep and what do you experience?
My front door flying all the way across the living room and damaging both of my couches and it kind of lays sideways where the door is blocked. And I just think that my house is being broken into. I have no idea what's going on. And so I'm a 2A, will always be 2A. The Second Amendment is to defend your home, your property, and your country from both enemies, foreign and domestic. And so I'm leaned across the railing with an AR, not knowing that there are federal agents outside. Until
come on. Why didn't they just call you?
See, and this is the thing, because at this point, this is when they've made the first announcement over the bullhorn. Ryan Zink, this is the FBI. Come out with your hands up.
But why didn't they just call you and say, report, you know, come downtown?
Because they used a Facebook post that I said, I'm not coming quietly on some stuff. I'd seen some of the other arrests, but I'm talking about my voice. I'm a journalist. Like, I'm not some, you know, redneck, you know.
Who are these Americans doing this?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I still believe to this day that there's foreign interference in 2020 as well, all through the Biden election.
Obviously.
Or term administration.
But these, the thugs who ripped your door off the hinges, mm-hmm. they're Americans.
Yes, the FBI.
So sad.
God. So, but there were multiple agencies that worked it. I mean, we're talking about 60 people in a helicopter.
Actually?
Yes.
And you never went inside the building?
They shut down the blocks around my house for fear that I was going to run. Like, where am I going to go? We're federal agents in the back.
This is what happens when you murder Americans and there's no, and Lindsey Graham applauds and everyone bipartisan applause
right.
for killing Americans. I'm just going to say it. I thought that about the ICE killings. I'm yeah. totally opposed to mass migration. It should deport every illegal. I really believe Absolutely. That they're destroying this country. However, it's not a small thing to shoot an American in the throat. It's just not. And you can't just blow past it because if they treat some liberal lesbian chick that way, they're going to treat you that way at some point. That's what I think.
Yeah. And we have to look at those individually across the scale. It's individual actions.
Don't show brutality to Americans. That's sure. how I feel. Like, why wouldn't I feel that way?
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know why I'm out of control. Okay. So you've got an AR. God bless yeah. you. And then what happens?
They make the announcement, and I dropped it quick because if any one of those guys had come around the corner, I wouldn't be here.
No. Oh, you'd be...
like riddled Swiss cheese. You know?
You'd be like the guy who predicted 9/11.
Yeah.
Or you'd be like the guy who showed up at Comet Pizza.
At the wrong time, yeah.
Yeah. And he was just shot to death in a traffic stop 2 weeks ago, as you may mm-hmm. have seen. Resisting arrest. Yeah, no, I'm sure they couldn't wait to kill you. So, wow. So you drop the AR and then you mm-hmm. find out it really is federal agents.
Yes. And so I'm trying to peek around the corner to see what's going on because, again, I live in a bad neighborhood. Like, this is a tactic that's used by people to infiltrate homes. Well, they'll be like, please come out with your hands up. And it's actually four dudes that are coming after to rob.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I can't really tell, but then that's when the red dots, you know, hit all over me. And that's when the flashlights.
Actually, the red dots were on your body?
Yes. They were actively going to shoot me. Like, if I had come around the corner with that, what would have happened? If I had decided not to post up at the back mantle, what would have happened?
It would have been quick anyway. Yeah, no.
Or would it? You know? I mean, right, no. Like, slow bleed out. So I'm taken into custody. I walk out. It's like, I don't know, like 12 degrees outside this day. And they will not let me have shoes. I'm standing outside barefoot in jogger pants and like a t-shirt for 38 minutes. So as they're inside of the house, they are flashbanging my dogs repetitively. A 6-pound Papillon, not even at that time, he's like 3 pounds, and a 70-pound chocolate lab, who's my bird dog, who now has PTSD and he's damaged. He can't hunt anymore. He's completely retired.
Do any of these guys go to prison?
No.
Every one of them should go to prison for doing this.
I believe that there are people that infiltrated this from Washington, D.C., like Michael D. Brown, the lead over my case. I believe that he should be behind bars, no questions asked. But
anybody
you
who flashbangs your chocolate lab should be in prison. It's really simple.
Yeah. Well, and not just that, but they need to pay for like the damages that it's caused, you know, just like to our family. And I'll get in, you know, into that some. Later, very briefly, but it's not just that. It's the way that they perpetrated this whole thing. Like, they broke every door in my house, unlocked doors, the bathroom door broken, bedroom door broken, smashed open for no reason. You know, they stole things from my coin collection. I'm still missing Roman coins. All of my gold coins are gone. These are federal agents stealing from it. Like, there's money. There's like a couple hundred dollars missing from my wallet. You know, they're federal agents doing this. How does that...
You know, I'm not leaving the United States, period. I'm going to die here. Same. But I wouldn't judge you if you said, I'm out, I'm going to El Salvador, I'm going to a civilized country.
I'm not.
Clearly you're not. And I respect that. But I also wouldn't judge you if you said, I can't live in a place like this. This is too scary.
I'm not. I'm here for the long run. Good. I'm texting by birth. We're going to fight. I promise. Good. And, you know, so all that happens. I wind up, I go to Lubbock County Jail. As I'm leaving, so they try to unlock my phone. They didn't have a warrant for my phone at first. They're trying to unlock it with my face. Michael D. Brown. There's a difference in those characters. Not much in morality causes, though. But, you know, they tell me, you know, like, do you know why we're here? And I'm like, I'm guessing this has something to do with the Capitol. I'm not saying anything else. You're not my friends, blah, blah, blah. So the Lubbock police officer from LPD pulls over after I'm taken into custody, shuts off all of his cameras, body camera, video camera, everything, and says, we wanted to do this a different way. What happened to you today? We were threatened that if we interfered in any way, that they would strip our badge and take us right down to the jail with you because you had multiple people from this department that know you that told them all you have to do is make a phone call.
Yeah.
And so that happens.
The feds forced this.
Yeah. So that happened. So the next, you know, couple weeks, I'm at Lubbock County Jail. Everyone was very nice there. Except for this one, you know, like super lesbian chick that was there that was always in a bad mood. And, you know, I still talk to some of these corrections officers that I see them, you know, and I pass them on the street now that my case has been dismissed and I have my pardon. You know, they're always like, you know, it was really crazy for us to see you there because it was obvious that you didn't belong. And so this is where the diesel therapy starts. So this is a common tactic. All J6ers went through this in some form or another. So first I went to Eden, Texas, had an impromptu interrogation as a terrorist, like where I was physically removed from the rest of the population, taken into a separate building, placed into a room with one man who I later found out was like the intake coordinator of that facility. I cannot remember his name right now. He's in the lawsuit. So we'll be seeing more about that to come. But, he brings me in, does an impromptu interrogation, says that he knows that I'm a terrorist, that I'm working with other people and stuff.
Who is this guy?
He just works for the facility. It's a core civic facility. It's a private institution that he just felt like he was going to, you know, be like Captain Save America or something. Obvious, super Democrat.
Yeah. Private prisons. Good idea. And,
yeah.
Thank you, Newt Gingrich, who ever thought that up. Yeah. Good plan. Yeah.
Not to mention that, like, I do believe in strong punishments for criminals. Like,
for
I'm,
sure.
I'm not, you know, I think that there's gross negligence on a lot of judges for the sentences that they put on people. But when you look at the prison system, it's a monopoly. Like, it's all the same people that are making all the money, you know, keeping Americans behind bars. And then, like, the grievance processes and things like that, there's a lot that needs to be done for prison reform. You know, just for conditions. And you'll see that in the next part of this segment. Like, by the time that I get to Washington, D.C., I've already seen, like, not at Lubbock County, like, nothing happened there, but at some of the other facilities, like federal, like transfer, like core civic, you know, you see dudes in there that are being forced to, like, put lipstick on with M&Ms, like green M&Ms. They have to dunk them in water and hold somebody's pocket. And this is all in, you know, plain view of staff.
Why are they doing that? What does that mean?
Because they're owned by somebody in there. They're being raped.
How long were you behind bars?
So 84 days is about what I did for the whole thing. I'm one of the lucky J6ers for all
that doesn't
of this.
Seem lucky to me. For never going inside the building, never breaking.
When you look at, you know, some of the other people, Enrique Tarrio, Ryan Samsel, you know, some of the conditions. Like, I had it bad, like, when I got to D.C., but I got to be out. I got to be with my family. I got to meet with my attorneys. I didn't have to spend 2, 3, 4 years in solitary confinement, you know, being driven crazy. My extent was just the D.C., and then I had to go to a federal prison in Arizona, which that's, you know, a whole nother thing in itself right there. You know, my worst part of my journey was, it will always be the two miscarriages. But, excuse me.
I'm sorry.
It's hard. I wasn't going to get emotional today, America.
No, it's all right.
But, you know, when I got to the facility, I was a J6er. Like, this is in C2B. This is the original pods. This whole facility in Washington, D.C. is covered in mold. This place was condemned and then reopened for use due to compiling crime that was going on. And I'd like to remind everybody that the Trump administration at the end arrested 67 or 62, I think, people. And then by the six-month mark, Joe Biden's administration had arrested well over 600 people at that point. So I'm one of the first people to get arrested for all of this. And what is given to all of these different agencies across the region, everyone, and what they actually told people in person, they were still talking about Brian Sicknick and his death and how like J6ers like beat him to death or something like that, which he died from natural causes. You know, we saw that. We've seen the autopsy report. They told cops at the scene that I had murdered a police officer. Of course, these guys are coming slamming. You know, like none of that's in the official paperwork, though. This is just what I know from, you know, doing my own research and coming back and talking to people. So by the time that I get to D.C., well, D.C. is obviously a Democratic district. All of the people that work at this jail are not, at least on the intake side, a majority of them, they're not from this country. They're all foreigners. So when we get there, the abuse starts. Like I've got, I can show you like scars on my wrist from where they dug handcuffs into me until I bled. I show these everywhere I go.
They're foreigners?
Yes. I believe most of them are from Somalia, at least the intake crew, the people that are actually.
What?
Yes. At that facility, when I was there, I would say probably 70% of that staff was foreigners.
Somalis?
Yep. Or a region close by, just according to the dialect that I looked into. So
whites are in serious trouble in this country. They're not going to be treated well. Sorry.
Well, I think anybody
don't
who
have
goes,
to agree with that,
anybody who goes against the status quo is not going to get treated well. I don't think it matters what color you are.
Well, there's
anymore.
Just so much hatred toward people on the basis of their skin color that
yes,
like,
there
it's
is.
Not good.
Well, and that's a problem in my district too. Like, you know, we have, you know, candidates that only work with one particular style of people, but they'll take money from everybody. You know, and there's a track record of that, but I'll get into that later. So when I get to DC, I'm segregated from the rest of the people that are there that, you know, are just like being transferred. I think there was like one guy was there for murder. And there's another guy for like burglary of rehabilitation, something like that. And I'm handed a bag of water and a moldy ham sandwich. That's my welcome to DC. So, I haven't eaten. Like I've been getting diesel therapy. I was in Oklahoma City.
What's diesel therapy?
That's where they just like, my family had no idea where I was. They wouldn't let attorneys know that you were being transferred. They would just move you from place to place to place. So I went from Lubbock County to Eden, Texas, to the Core Civic facility. Then I was taken to Midland, Texas, but we did a big round road trip all the way up to like Anton, Texas, then back down. Then I went over to Midland. I got on Conair. I actually flew on the, you know, big Conair plane, and I flew from Midland to Oklahoma City. Then I went to the federal sorting center just outside of Oklahoma City. And then I was also put onto a smaller plane. I was flown to either somewhere in Pennsylvania or New Jersey. And then we did a road trip where they didn't allow us to stop, like, period, until we got to the jail. Like, they stopped on the side of the road to relieve themselves, but they wouldn't let us out to do it. And then
were you handcuffed during this travel?
The entire time. Shackles, handcuffs, and a box. Over the top.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
In the vehicle, you're shackled.
In the van, yeah. For this entire, like, however many hours that we drove. And mind you, I don't know where I am. I still don't know what airport we landed at to be able to get an accurate time description.
What were the other guys like who were traveling with you?
One of them was a J6er. I mean, they were some, you know, a little rowdy. I mean, it's, you know, it's prison, jail. Like, they've, you know, talking crap, like everything else, but, you know, pretty relaxed, I'd say, for the most part. At least from what I, like, up to that point, like, then I was, like, you know, still, like, new to the whole, you know, being arrested scene, so I didn't really know, like, what rowdy meant then. But then, you know, so we're in there, we finally get there, I get my moldy ham sandwich, and then it takes hours to get process. So they come in, they take a picture of your iris, you know, of your eye, sorry. And, you know, get your fingerprints, get everything done. If you said anything to them, they're either going to like push you, shove your head into something, like they're very, very aggressive. And then, so the reason that I have the scars on my wrist from the handcuffs is because I asked this particular gentleman where he wanted me to put my clothes. And he told me to shut the F up, do what he says. And then as soon as that happened, I was like, okay, here or there, basically. And he just was like, just turn around. And so he put cuffs on me, taking me all the way through. I still like, there's still a lot of trauma from this that I sort through. So I just
get, this is such a nightmare. I can't even, I'm listening to you thinking like, how would I handle this? I don't know.
Well, you just, I mean, the only way that I handled this was my faith in Jesus. I mean, I'll just be completely upfront, honest about it.
Were you a Christian when it started?
Absolutely. I was a Christian. I wasn't living my life the way I was supposed to, but I can definitely tell you that this woke me up to where, you know, I'll get into that. You'll see the exact moment here in just a minute too. But, you know, I make it to the first cell and, the first cell that I'm introduced to at this facility has a quarter inch of urine and feces on the ground, and there's no running water in this cell. Like, eventually they turn the water on to where it's there, but we're talking 2 days later. You know, so I'm in here. I'm in this cell that's covered in mold, urine and feces, another person's urine and feces, not mine, by the way.
This is in Washington, D.C.?
This is in Washington, D.C., in C2B, the first pod that I was put in. I think it was six to the right if you go to the far left of when you walk into there.
What are we doing? I don't understand. Like, what is this country doing?
I don't either. And it gets worse. Like, it gets a lot worse from there. And so at this point in time, this is when I'm starting to complain. I'm saying, you know, like, hey, can you get me a plunger? Like, can I have a mop? Can I have anything? Denied, 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 denied. They're not letting me out. I haven't showered. It's been 3 days. Been there. No shower. At this point, it's really been like 5 days because I haven't showered since I left the sorting center in Oklahoma. Okay. So, you know, I had to do a whole flight plus a drive, you know, to get there at this point. I haven't really eaten anything. I'm getting food at this for these couple of first days that I'm there. And I finally get an attorney call. And I had some other attorneys that they're Democrats. They decided not to continue with my case because I refused the plea deal. I wouldn't take it. I sent you a copy of that as well. So so you can see like the verbiage and what like the government wanted me to admit to in order to receive probation versus a 20-year felony. And so I complain to my attorney and she calls the facility and says, you know, we want to do a conditions check. So they move me all the way to the end. I'm at the very end cell of the block. And this made them very mad, very, very mad. As a matter of fact, I only got to come out to shower like twice during this point, and one of them is super critical. So I'm here for however many weeks that I'm at this facility, and this is when they started putting bleach in my food, or Windex, any type of chemical that was in there. I never had another meal that if I got to eat, didn't have some kind of chemical in it because I had complained about the facility, and obviously I got somebody in trouble. But I still don't know who that is to this day because they won't open records, you know, for J6ers. So I asked for a Bible every single day that I was there, which is why I carry mine with me everywhere I go, brought here to the studio today. I was allowed to have a book. So this is the only thing that I had in solitary confinement the entire time that I was there. It was an eighth grade level reading book about a slave owner who falls in love with a slave, cheats on his wife, and runs away to the north with her. Perfect reading for an eighth grade. You know, school, I guess, in Washington, D.C. And so I'm sitting in my cell. I'm losing lots of weight. Like I don't have a cup to drink out of. I'm drinking out of the bag that my soap came in. I'm very sick. I'm rinsing out like rice and trying to rinse off, like they would give us boiled eggs. And then when they would deliver my food, they would, you know, bring it in like the little styrofoam things too. And sometimes there would just not be anything in there. So I would go for days on end without eating, or I would have, you know, rice and a piece of ham that's completely soaked in bleach that I have to stick inside of my socks and start wringing it out, you know, just to be able to have some sustenance. And I'm having all kinds of stomach issues. I'm losing weight very, very, very rapidly at this point. And I'm getting very sick. Well, then one day they finally let me out for a shower. And of course, somebody goes in my cell and I'm thinking, you know, oh, they're probably just doing an inspection or something like that. Well, what had actually happened was they tried to kill me. They went in and they placed raw pieces of chicken inside of my water line to where I would turn on the faucet and the water would come out and it would go past the raw pieces of chicken. And I didn't figure this out for I don't really know when, like how many days it was, because I had like no sense of time, because I didn't have a tablet. I didn't have anything that other prisoners were allowed to be afforded, because I was all the way at the end. And the only way that I knew this was because I was drinking out of that bag that my soap came in, and a little piece fell out. And I was able to stick my toothbrush, my little government issued 2-inch toothbrush, up inside of there and knock all of that chicken out. And there were three pieces about this big inside of there. And mind you, I went in it like I'm since I got out of prison, like obviously I've been eating a little bit, you know, but I went in at like 180. I came out at like 130 pounds. Like I would get out.
You lost 50 pounds?
50 pounds in custody in Washington, D.C. You know, when you consider like stress, not eating, you know, just the overwhelming amount of stress, like having nosebleeds all the time from the chemicals that are in my food, throwing up all the time because my stomach hurts and I don't have anything to keep it down, being denied medical at all, never allowed to have a medical form, never allowed to have a grievance form, nothing. Like we were isolated, alone, left there to die. I thought I was going to die. As I say it before you now, I thought there was a point in time where I was going to die. I was looking out the window of the cemetery. There's a cemetery that goes around this building on the backside. And I would watch people. It was the only thing I had, because I only had that one book about a slave that I, you know, slid back out under the door so somebody else could have something to do. And I would watch people walk their dogs through the cemetery. And I looked out there and I was like, I'm going to die in here. And like, this is probably where I'm going to go. And my family's not going to know, you know, like what happened to me. And by the grace of God, he came into the cell with me, you know, while I'm praying, like, God, what did I do to deserve this? Like, I thought I stood for something that day. I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't damage anything. Like, I didn't do anything that would really make me deserve this. Like, why am I here? And God said very clearly, I know the path that I have for you. You'll be fine. You're going to get out of this. I'll be right there with you. Stay where I put you. Stay where I put you.
Did you believe him?
It was hard to at the time, but seeing the progression of where everything has gone, oh, Tucker, he was there. He was there the whole time, and he never left me. Period. And he'll never leave anybody that believes in him. No matter where you're at, I promise he'll be in the fire with you. I promise he'll be there.
Man.
Like, I would get out like 4 days later. The video of me protecting police officers on the East Porch would get to Judge Boasberg, and he would release me. And I was one of the first ones to get out, like out of all of this. And that's when the fight began. You know, we started going. I was looking at decades in prison.
Decades?
Decades in prison.
I just want to say again that no one who did this has ever been punished that I know of.
No, they haven't. I
don't understand how, if Republicans have all three branches of government, have the Congress, both chambers and the executive branch, I don't understand how no one's been punished.
Well, I can tell you it's because there's a division that's up there. A third of the people want J6ers to go to prison forever. A third of the people just want J6 to disappear, and the other third don't care. They're too focused on everything else. Which, you know,
we're all going to have to answer for what we do.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Very much so. So that's basically the worst part besides the miscarriages. You know,
what did you mean when you said the miscarriages?
So my wife and I, we've had two miscarriages during this entire process of me being arrested. And then the conviction was up to that point. And now we have one daughter, another one on the way.
Oh, so bless you.
So, sorry, I was like, you know, it's just crazy to me that I would have a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old, an 18-month-old, and then one more on the way right now with our other daughter that's expected in April. And I just, they're the reason that I fight, because I have to leave something behind.
Yes.
For them. And then so, you know, we would go through this whole process of going back and forth to trial with the imminent peace that just reigned over me. You know, from that point, it's one of the things that, you know, it was difficult getting convicted in D.C., but you know, 14 Democrats, two Democrat, you know, prosecutors. I have, you know, three federal witnesses that I can now prove perjured themselves in their testimony. I had 300 Brady violations. They refused to turn over 300 points of evidence from my camera, cell phone, and SD cards that I took for pictures on the day. All the way up into the trial, they were still saying that I had assaulted police officers, gone into the building, and was just running like ruckus that day. So we got those dismissed. I was September 23rd. I was convicted of the obstruction felony, 1512 C2, that was overturned at the Supreme Court. I was put on stay and a motion to stay until the Supreme Court ruled on that. And then when we got to sentencing, I was only convicted of the two misdemeanors. And there's a very critical aspect. I sent y'all the picture last night of what it was supposed to be posted outside. Well, John Nassif, another J6er, just got his, you know, the Supreme Court didn't actually hear the case, but they made a ruling on it that said that the First Amendment application ends the second a person crosses the threshold of the United States Capitol. So if that's the case, and they made the ruling on his that the First Amendment ends, I never crossed the threshold. So we'll see what the future holds for my lawsuits against the federal government.
So when were you convicted?
September of 23.
So, I mean, that, you know, so this is basically just like consumed your life for years.
Years, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I mean, how do you have a job during this? Like, how, what are you doing with your life when you're just...
So I'm still active in safety. Like I can get a, like I work in safety right now.
What does that mean, safety?
So I am a safety coordinator. So I look at like what people are doing when they work and decide, which I mean, I have a boss, you know, so it's like...
I didn't mean specifically who do you work for, but like what, oh, so you like go into a work site and assess what.
Yeah. And I do audits and I watch like behavioral mechanisms to see like if ergonomically there's something that we could change to stop somebody from getting hurt. Is there a process that we can change? Are there administrative controls? Are there like, can we put a guard to prevent somebody from sticking their hand inside of here?
Right.
And then I was also at some of the harshest times. So I was actually working. I have no problem trashing them. I was working for Bayer Crop Science as their safety director for the research and development department, and working with cotton, you know, all these different just stuff that's relevant to my area, you know, where I live. And they terminated me when I got convicted. I told them, you know, I'm going on appeal. And
why'd they fire you?
For getting convicted. Bayer's very liberal. So
Bayer being the German pharma company.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So they, you know, it just, you know, that was one of the things I was working.
How liberal are they?
Very. Like.
That isn't how liberal. That sounds like authoritarian kind of.
Well, when you see like all the rest of the stuff that they do around the globe, it's very easy to see like which side they lean to. Like, the red tape, bureaucratic control of like what they're spraying, the secrecy of behind it. I mean, you
what
look.
What they're spraying?
Yes, like agents that are harming, you know, farmers. Like we have, you know, all like the chemicals that they spray are causing health issues amongst, you know, farmers. It's not just here. This is like a global aspect.
But Bayer is doing that.
And yeah, so I mean,
Zyklon B
type stuff. What does the general public actually know about what's being sprayed?
Zero.
And then all of that paperwork and everything is bound up and there's only a select group of people that can know what's being sprayed up an airplane, you know, 500 yards from your house on land that they're leasing. You know, there's some real issues and some transparency issues that need to be handled. And that's one of the things that I hope to go forward with in Congress, you know, if elected, is that.
So you're saying chemtrails are not just a conspiracy theory?
When you look at that. I would believe that chemtrails are totally real.
They've admitted it's real, but it's just funny after.
And so is cloud seeding. I mean, we literally have companies that are stating that they've been successful at putting, you know, manufactured rain in our area.
Well, of course. No, of course. So. That's true around the world. Mm-hmm. But,
which if it's successful, I think.
Well, they
that's
also
great,
said for four years that J6 was totally organic. It was not a false flag. And now we know it was a false flag.
Yeah. And there's documents that came out this week that, you know, even Christopher Wray, who, by the way, I forgot a part. So when I was arrested, he flew to Lubbock and gave the police chief of Lubbock an award. And then he became.
For smashing all your doors and terrorizing your dog.
Well, I mean, the feds did that.
So what was the effect on your family, on your wife, for example?
we had a lot of problems. I think it was very scary, the fact that so my wife and I, we've never had a wedding because we couldn't. I didn't want them to label her as a domestic terrorist. If you go in and look at the Quiet Skies program, and you know, also the way that the Patriot Act is allowed to move throughout communities. The Patriot Act, I believe, is one of the most unconstitutional acts that was ever passed after 9/11. They're literally able to quantify you. So I was labeled as a white Christian nationalist, and then a domestic terrorist. So like, this is the first flight.
You were labeled as white and Christian, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, this is the first flight that I've had that doesn't have the four S's at the bottom of it since February 4th, 2021. This flight here, to where I didn't get stopped at every single gate that I went through for never even going into the building. So, you know, and going back to the whole work thing, I do have to say that I did travel all across the state of Texas and speak. I would do speaking engagements too, where I would talk about J6. I had the Trump trailer. It was gifted to me by one of the GOP chairs in Amarillo, and I was selling Trump merchandise all across the state of Texas at events, 4th of July's, any place that I could find that I could post up, all while running for Congress in the last term, you know, as well, while I'm, you know, going through this, because no representation. There were only two people that actually stood up for me. Out of all the offices that I called, including Jody Arrington, the current, budget committee chairman and congressman for my district that's retiring, he refused to help. The two people.
Why?
A third of them want us to go to prison forever. A third of them wanted us to, you know, disappear. And the other third don't care. And
did you ever speak to Jody Arrington?
Face to face. Met face to face. Showed him everything that I've given you.
What did he say?
Nothing. So that he wasn't getting involved. Nothing.
We're all going to have to answer for how we live.
We are. But I do have to give shout out to the two people that did. I disagree with some of the stuff that's happened. Policies are indifferent, but I have to give credibility where credibility's due. Dustin Burroughs, the Speaker of the House for the state of Texas, wrote a letter to the judge. And
good for him.
George Santos.
Of course.
Former Congressman George Santos wrote it in. And I love George. I talk to him, you know, pretty regularly. I disagree with the way that some of the stuff with him was handled. You know, it just...
I never understood why George Santos, who's got a rank at the very bottom of the ranking of like threats to national security.
Yeah.
Why George Santos went to prison. He did time in prison also, as you know. Why do they hate George Santos so much? Who, by the way, anyone who knows George Santos, impossible to hate the guy.
Yeah, he's very nice.
Oh, yeah, he's amazing. But just, and I don't agree with him on everything either, but I don't need to. He's a decent man. You know, he's a nice man. But I think it's stuff like that that got him
in prison. Yeah, well, he brought me into his office. His staff was very, very nice to me.
Of course.
And he looked through everything.
Of course he did.
And, you know, and did, you know, and anything that I thought was in his power to help. And, you know, it wasn't enough. Like the GOP chairs in a couple of different counties wrote some letters, but actual elected officials, that's it. And I called every office in the state of Texas.
What about your governor?
Abbott doesn't care.
What about Senator Ted Cruz?
Cruz's office wouldn't respond.
They wouldn't respond.
I couldn't even get a call back. Nothing.
You should have told him you're Israeli. He'd show up at your house. Of course, he'd ask for money, but...
We got multiple phone calls from unavailable numbers that said, if your dad drops out of the race, we'll drop the charges. Like, we'll give you $200,000 to drop and take the plea deal. Like, I got phone calls like all through
this. Was your dad arrested?
No.
Interesting.
Well... And I mean, that's one of the things that it's like, why did they target me? It was because I wasn't a Republican congressional candidate. I was just there, you know, and
your poor dad, he must have felt such guilt.
He did. But at the end of the day, it's not his fault.
No, of course it's not his fault. But
you know, yeah. And like he does. And he gets real emotional about it sometimes. But the thing is that we never stopped the fight. We never stopped. All this did was make me mad. The things that I've been through. All this did was prove that our government has too much power. All this does is prove that the people of the United States of America have had their constitutional rights whittled away from them one vote at a time. in a room of like 435 people that then goes up to the Senate, gets signed off on. That's where we're at. Because I fully believe that we are not in a battle against flesh and blood, but spiritual battle for the United States of America. And not just for that, for our world. And that's one of the biggest parts of my message of why I want to run for Congress is not just what I've been through, which was a nightmare, but it was who stood with me while I was in the fire. And that's Jesus Christ. That's my faith. There are three books that built this nation: the Bible, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. And they all three play off of each other. And that is my platform, because the United States was designed to be run underneath the men who have the respect for the Bible. And if you don't have that, then your oath means nothing.
That's right.
Any oath that somebody takes to this country, and some of the oaths in Washington, D.C., I don't think they're valid either. Like when you look at Jeb Boasberg, a Skull and Bones member, you know, there's lots of things with him that are just ridiculous. That's my judge. And if you don't, like for the viewers, if you don't know who that judge is, that's the one that's trying to make President Trump bring back the 127 Venezuelans who were put on a plane, and he tried to make the plane turn back around. You know, this is an unelected official trying to dictate out of a district of the United States of America, trying to dictate exactly what a president can do, what the Supreme Court can do, what you can do. And then he's destroying lives. He's the chief judge in D.C. And I believe that he's responsible, because even at trial, like, he denied me a defense of the First Amendment, allowed 300 Brady violations, witnesses to lie. You know, he says, like, I'll give you an example of one of the jurors that I had. So one of the people that was approved for jury for my trial was a Democrat leader for, I think it was the Netherlands, who he literally stated when he came, he was like, I don't think that I can sit for this case because I believe that everyone that was at the Capitol that day is a terrorist. And James Boasberg was like, well, what we're talking about specifically is this defendant. Have you seen anybody or anything about him that would lead you to believe that you couldn't be fair and partisan? And he said, well, I guess not. And they said, great, we'll see you at 4 o'clock for selection. This is in my transcripts. Like, that's the kind of fairness that we had. 14 Democrats, one of them cared so little about my life, he fell asleep and then never showed back up after the third day.
It's not a jury if you're Pierce, I think it's fair to say. No, it's not. The other thing I notice is that people believe whatever they're told by the media.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I really do think that mainstream leftist-leaning media is the true enemy of the people of the United States, because you can still tell a lie while telling a portion of the truth. Like, if you leave out, you know, any part that's absolutely relevantly critical, you can completely spin a story while it's true. Like, what they're saying for as far as libel, slander, goes, you know, those probably don't apply. Defamation, because one portion of it is true, like they'll be fine in a courtroom, but we don't have judges that are going after them, you know, for the way that they portray things. And I think that there should be accountability in media, you know. And but how do we do that?
Did any media organization cover J6 fairly, do you think, or was it all?
Jen Phillips from Lubbock gave me a fair shot. I think that Manny from Abilene gave me a fair shot. That's it. You know, I mean, as far as like the, you know, the leftist leaning, like NBC, ABC affiliates. Now, like the Epoch Times, like all the people that I talked to along the way, you know, Diamond and Silk, like all the shows that I've been on, they've been very fair, you know, ask some hard questions, you know, and things that people wanted to know. And I think that's fine. I think that's great, you know, banter. But then, you know, you look back at, you know, what was done to me this last week. I was at a forum, KCBD comes in, they do an interview with me, and instead of actually showing, so like I've already filed an appeal and my case has been dismissed. So not only did I go through all of this, but my case is now dismissed and I'm pardoned by the president. So instead of stating all of the facts, they just said, you know, put up a video of me talking about the district and then said, Zink was convicted of crimes in September of 23, even despite the fact that none of those are relevant anymore, that I've gone through this all
of this. Have your gun rights been restored?
Yes. Yes, they have. So, and I use them, and I encourage everybody to have them. And Everywhere that I go, I carry, and I think every American should too. I think you should be given two things at birth, a Bible and a gun.
Yep.
And learn to use them both accordingly, because they will be the biggest weapons that you need to fight everything in this world, particularly more so on the Bible. But now I'm running again.
So why are you, so first of all, thank you for recounting that.
Appreciate it. Yeah, man.
It was an emotional.
It is. Man, I try not to, but man, it's so hard.
Oh, it made me emotional. Okay, why are you running for Congress?
I want to make sure that West Texas stays away from Washington, D.C. politics and Austin, Texas politics. We have a great thing in our district, and we have lots of issues that need to be looked at sincerely. And we cannot have somebody who is not willing to speak up in the fight for our country. Representation in our area has always been very lax on what they'll say. And I think that we need a strong front. I think that I've been vetted out. You know, I refuse to take a plea deal. I refuse to bend the knee. So I feel like I've already been vetted. You can tell a lot about a person who has faced the giants and came out on the other side and kept moving. And I believe that I would do a lot of good for the district, because we're in a spiritual battle. And I've become so close in my faith. I have a lot of support from my community. I've never actually met a person that has condemned me for what happened once they've seen like everything that I was able to show them.
I don't know what they would condemn you for.
Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, there's some people you're just never going to reach. I mean, it's like you can see it on like Facebook posts, Twitter posts, which I don't even have a congressional Facebook page right now because they seized it again.
Who did?
Facebook.
Why?
They took it down because I am not real. Disingenuous behavior.
I'm totally confused. When did Facebook take this down?
Like 5 days ago. So they seized.
They took down your congressional Facebook page?
Yes. Yes.
For
disingenuous behavior.
Disingenuous? Like
yeah,
false?
They're basically saying that I'm not who I say that I am, even though I am a congressional candidate. They keep seizing it. And I'll scroll through my phone. I got like 50 different examples. I'm actually filing charges with the Lubbock County Sheriff's Office over this. I'm not really sure what's going to be able to be done about this, because, you know, we saw like Kara Castronova fire her case against Facebook, and I think she spent a couple $1 million and lost. But, you know, this is one of those things where a left-leaning liberal outlet, like, he's donated like $500 million to Democrats, speaking specifically about Mark Zuckerberg. And then they have the right to deny my voters my opinion just because they can say that I'm disingenuous.
But did you do something to trigger this?
There's only two posts on there. One was about abortion. I tried to post something about abortion because I believe that life begins at conception.
Well, obviously it does.
Yeah, I will never vote for anything that would promote abortion in America. Abortion is murder.
Well, of course it is.
And
everyone knows that, by the way.
Yeah, and you know, and that was one of the things that they just absolutely would not let me post. And then the day after that, they seized it.
Oh, so Mark Zuckerberg doesn't want anything to get in the way of human sacrifice.
I don't know if that's his stance, but from the people he hangs out with, I think that could be a real possibility, yeah. I think that's real. I think most of what they're...
So you're running for Congress. I don't think I've heard a story of someone mistreated by the government like the one you just told in a long time. That's an unbelievable story. And then you want to participate. You don't become a revolutionary. You're not stockpiling C4. You're like, I'm going to go to Washington and change the system within the structures that our forefathers created. Like, you're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And Zuckerberg's like, yeah, I don't like your position on abortion. You can't talk in public anymore. What do you do about that? Like, who do you appeal to?
X. That's where I go to. You know, it's, Ryan Z for Congress is my page on there. I've never once been taken down. I've never had anything. And I've posted some real doozies, you know, like you have to go where the freedom is in this country. And, so X, you know, independent, shows to get the truth out.
But there's no one you can call if Facebook takes you down, right?
Nope, there's not. There's not a phone number. There's nothing. You have to go through the appeals process. And actually, they haven't even given me an appeal process to get it back. They just seized it, took it from me.
I sat across from Mark Zuckerberg at the presidential inauguration. Were you there? Were you invited?
No, I was not.
Okay. He was. So just for the record.
Interesting. Well, I can tell you why. I can tell you why I think. It's because a majority of the J6 Facebook profiles were surrendered voluntarily. They didn't even have to get a warrant on a majority of them. Now, there were warrants that were issued. Some of them actually came later. But the things that people post that are now public information, three-letter agencies can take that and they can do compression files on it. And that's how they were like labeling people and rounding people up. People have no idea what they're agreeing to when they, you know, click that box. Like they just want the Facebook account. They want to be able to connect to, you know, Chad from Billings, Montana, they went to high school with. But they don't see the danger that's behind what they're actually agreeing to. That is perfectly legal because it's a private company. And that's part of the issue. That's some of the things that I want to change when I get there. Not just like, there's a lot of stuff about my district that I like to cover, but you know, there's a lot of protections that Americans voluntarily give up that they should be made aware of. Like it should literally be a checkbox that says, are you aware that any photo that you post on here is compiled into an AI drive to help identify you? That's something that should be talked about. But it's very clearly in a long, you know, summation of wording, you're agreeing to that and it's there and it's real. And this is a very clear and present danger. You know, like AI is a big concern of mine because one, we have to stay out ahead of China. I think this, so in my district, this is a big issue because we're getting AI centers, we're getting data centers. We're very concerned about how we're going to keep water in our district.
I was about to say, do you have the water for that?
So, we have the water, but for how long? You know, when they come in, are we looking at 20 years? Are we looking at 30 years? I have proposals that I would like to see that are, you know, we have flare gas in West Texas. It's a way to burn off gas.
Yep.
Atmospheric water generators would be perfect to put on there. We could offset and let them use it. Closed loop systems, I think, are going to be mostly beneficial, but they cost, they take a lot of energy. And how are we supposed to keep, you know, we have to stay ahead of China. We have to stay ahead of Russia.
So are these set, not to get in the weeds, but are these centers going to be run on flare gas? Is that the idea?
That's what I would like to see.
Well, yeah.
I would like to, I would like to get on several committees, like the Ag Board, energy sector. And because I believe that we can do this, but at what cost? I mean, we're already $40 trillion in debt. We just spent like, what, another $800 million like yesterday or the day
before. So is the district being asked to pay for some of this stuff?
I think that, just like anything else, you know, they say this is not going to hurt you. You know, this is not going to affect your, you know, your electric bill. And then what do we see 3 years down the road when the funding runs out? You know, it comes from us. Then tax rates go up and we see.
Why would citizens fund private businesses, whether it's a sports stadium or a data center? I don't understand. Like what?
Well, yeah. And, you know, but you see this all the time where we get promised something. Say like wind turbines. They said that it was going to be like one of the greatest things. I built them. I built hundreds of these things. They're not ever going to pay for themselves, you know. And
this doesn't. Have you told Ben Shapiro? Because this doesn't sound like the free market to me at all.
Man, maybe I should. You think he'd listen?
No, I don't think he's on your. I don't think he's on your side, Ryan. But you know, you just hear these people. The free market, capitalism. I'm in favor of it. When do we get that? Because this doesn't. Right. It seems like the opposite. Seems like crushing the middle class to help like a tiny percentage of the population get richer than anyone's ever been.
And then blame it on the rich. Yeah.
Doesn't seem like capitalism to me, but who are you running against?
So I'm running against eight. So there's eight people total in the race.
In the primary.
Yes. So, well, there's seven in the Republican and then one in the Democrat seat.
I'm assuming West Texas is still decided in the primary, correct?
Yeah, so it's whoever gets this seat, you're in, pretty much.
Right, the Republican winner of the Republican primary will be the next member of Congress.
Yeah, I think we're 20 plus 25 plus 27
Republican. Right, yeah, that's my point. Okay, so of the seven, the six you're running against, who are they? Do you have a shot?
I do believe that I have a shot. I think that I have the experience. I think that, you know, once people see the full, you know, story of J6 plus, you know, I think so. So, one of the people that we have is Tom Sell. He is a lobbyist. He's worked in, you know, he's worked in ag for a long time, but for both sides. And not all of the things that he's worked on do I feel really had the relevancy to quantify experience. I think that he was there with Larry Combist whenever he was a congressman for our district, the first Republican congressman when we flipped and have been a Republican ever since. But I'm not really keen on 76% of the farm bill going to SNAP benefits. I think it's a waste of money. You know, there's a lot of things about the farm bill that need to be changed. I mean, the farmers in our area, well, not just here, but all across the United States, but this is the district that I love, that I call home, is we have some of the highest input costs that we've ever seen, ever. And we need a farm bill that stops putting a Band-Aid on funding. I mean, we have a slew of things. I think one of the most important issues that's been neglected, not only in the first farm bill that he helped write, is insurance. We're at a giant insurance war, and also in funding. Like, it is very, very hard to get ag lending with the interest rates, with the amount of money that goes down, not to mention if you're trying to buy a new tractor. I don't know if you've looked at the price of some of those lately. It's astonishing how much it's costing us. And then at the same time, you know, we have grifters that are coming in across the district that make these raucous claims about they've generated millions of votes for Donald Trump with an organization for, you know, like Abraham Enriquez. And I've seen no relevant information outside of what his campaign puts out that he's raised millions of votes for Donald Trump. I haven't seen it. You know, I hear it from
him.
So
these are, you're talking about a candidate in mm-hmm. the primary.
Yes.
So I don't know how you've been treated, but having watched other people make similar statements about the way our system works, I think you're going to get attacked. That's just my guess.
I've been attacked for 5 years now, but
on what grounds?
I've had death threats. We've had somebody come out to my house and place three shooting targets on my vehicles, one for me, one for my wife, and one for my daughter. I turned those over to the Hockley County Sheriff's Office, and they took a report. There were no fingerprints. Nothing came out of it. You know, I get attacked for being at J6. I get attacked for, my faith on a regular basis. There's, you know, little nefarious group of, no, I'm not just going to say Democrats. I'm just going to say, you know, people that don't believe, you know, the spiritual warfare aspect of it. There's always that attack. But the threats on my life and my family are the ones that, you know, it's something that I hope nobody has to experience, but I'm there, you know, already. You know, we have guys in our race that are parading around, you know, after getting the government's endorsement with security in Jones County. Like, nobody wants to shoot anybody in Jones County. You know, this is a very, very small district that, you know, has lost, you know, two hospitals, which is another huge, you know, huge issue. And then we have, you know, just continuing, like, with who I'm running against, Jason Corley, Precinct 2 Commissioner for Lubbock, Texas. I like Jason. I think he's a great guy, honestly. I think he's got some experience and some knowledge that I think would benefit across the district. Not to say that I don't have, you know, the same experience. I've been entirely focused on how Congress works for 5 years, trying to overcome laws that would not just benefit me, but 1,600 people. I think there's some things that he wants to do that are great for the district that I would love to be a part of too. But there's something missing, and it's not, you know, like a smash at him, because I think there's guys that have run for the right reason. And then you have Donald May, who's 80 years old. He's I believe he's a neurosurgeon, if I remember correctly. Has a, you know, decorated veteran. You know, he's a wonderful man. Do we really want to put up, you know, look at Mitch McConnell this week? Like, where are we at across the line of how old is too old? Like, he seems pretty chipper, but some of the things that he says, I think it's more of a fantasy than a reality of what you're actually going to get to committee.
Well, a dying country has dying leaders. So right. it's just a bad trend. I would say.
And I think there's some dissonance to that, because what can you actually get accomplished right now? I mean, we have everything that we need to restore this country right now. We still aren't getting the votes.
Yeah, not getting anything done at all. And it's getting worse, of course. And it's just a complete betrayal. I think that's fair to say. But the question is why? And the answer, from what I can tell, maybe you disagree, is that the machine is so strong that it takes an extraordinary person to stand in its way.
It does. But I think that we could do that, though, and see.
It just takes some extraordinary people.
I mean, look at what the Squad did to Congress. Like, look at how they were able to manipulate Nancy Pelosi into a corner.
They're in their own way extraordinary people. I mean, it's just a fact. I disagree with them, of course.
Me too.
I think they're A, talented, and B, you know, pretty brave, really. They stood against a lot of things that their leadership wanted. And I don't know. I don't want them in charge of anything. I know they put me in prison immediately if they ever took power. However, absolutely, I think their success within their own conference is a model to Republicans. Like, don't go along with what Mitch McConnell wants and Mike Johnson's.
Or just weak, ineffective. That's sinister
too. I mean, let's be honest, they're sinister. What is this?
The biggest thing that I see that is like holding Americans back is that we have to get control of our spending. Our budget is designed to protect America, benefit the American citizens, and then we get into foreign policy about, you know, like where typically our money is gone is it leaves our country. And I have a huge issue with that, you know, and some of the other candidates, they don't have an issue with that. I'm America first. I believe if it doesn't benefit Americans, then we shouldn't be doing it. And I don't care what country it is. There's no reason for us to be sending billions and billions of dollars, one, to research, you know, transgender frogs in South America, any of these other crazy things that have come out with Doge. And we should not only be allowing Doge to continue, but we should be way more actively involved in where our spending goes. I think that Americans have the right to say no.
Of course. Of course they do. No. And yeah. And I do think at this point, when you find out that like everyone at DOJ has been sitting on the Epstein files for 15 years and they knew, they're complicit in it. And so at this point, the government has very little legitimacy left, I would say. I don't feel that they're legitimate. And
I just think that there's no transparency at all.
Right.
I just think that we're being completely lied to.
Well, right.
And you have to navigate that. You have to have the experience of going through something like I did to see the wording, to see the writing on the wall, and not donate money to the other side for this cause or stand firm in the gap for where you are, because we're never going to get anywhere if we don't fix it. Like, I really feel, you know, we're coming up on 250 years here. July 4th. What are we going to leave behind for our children?
I agree. It takes bravery. That's what it takes. And you've displayed it. So last question is, since you're not on Facebook.
Well, I have one. I just don't have a congressional page.
How do people learn about your campaign? How do they send you money?
I just want to say that if every viewer that watched this sent me $5, we could keep the district in its entirety in Republican control. I think that would be more than enough. But I only take money from people that believe in me. I don't want to take money from PACs. You know, everybody says, you know, yeah, well, they'll give you all this. I want business owners. I want true patriots, Americans who are sick of the system that we live in to get behind me. I don't want to see... If you think that I'm going to bow down to a cause like with Major Farm or something like that, that would get me to vote a certain way that dishonors the people of my district or dishonors the way that I would live my Christian life, I don't want your money. But if you want to be one of the people that believes in me, that stands up for American values, that stands up for a country that was founded on biblical principles, you can go and you can find everything about my campaign and about me at ryanzink.vote. That's ryanzink.vote. I'm on X at Ryan Z for Congress. That's the tag handle. And then Ryan Zink is my Facebook. And then also I have a TikTok, but I use that more of a platform for my Bible studies. If I feel led to move, you know, something to get a message out on there, I put that on TikTok. And that's just Ryan Zink for Congress on there.
I appreciate you taking all this time and coming out here for this.
Man, I appreciate you putting some interest in District 19. You know, it's very hard to be in our area and get recognition, get exposure to like the needs of our community.
Oh, I bet.
Just for where we are. I feel like sometimes we, as big as we are, like it's a large district. It's over 30,000 square miles. You know, we've got, you know, 750,000 people ish, somewhere around there. It's a big district, and you know, it's food, it's fuel, it's fiber, but more importantly, it's faith, it's family, and it's freedom is what grows in our district. And that's where I call home, and I love it. And I really appreciate the opportunity to come in and tell my story.
Amen. Ryan Zink, thank you very much.
Thank you.